and Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Mari Lurie interviewing Gloria Elbling, and today is July 24th, 1990. How are you, Gloria?
I'm just fine this morning.
Pleased to be with you again. Good.
Now we have to.
Gloria, we are going to continue our very interesting conversation with you. But before we get into your interest in Na'amat, which is, I think, where we'd like to start, I have to ask you something. Early on in the tape, you mentioned in your younger days, you took dancing with Gene Kelly. And seeing as how he's a well-known person, do you remember anything about him that you'd like to add?
I think I mentioned that he taught at the Beth Shalom. That was to help in paying his tuition at the University of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. He was very friendly, very personable. The whole family, I would say, were very friendly with the Jewish community, and the relationship was something that was quite unusual. It would be unusual even today, probably more so than it was then. Maybe because we were all living through the Depression and living in this particular community, we each depended on each other and complimented each other. But his mother was very friendly, his sister Louise, his brother Fred. I would imagine that most of their clientele were Jewish students. None of them that I know of became very famous, although some of them were very good dancers and performers.
Was it actually ballet, or were you into
tap dancing.
Okay.
It was tap dancing, ballet, singing. Those that had a good voice, some that had stage presence were given individual acts. I don't remember if I mentioned that they had a kermis, at least from this part of the school. That was a review at the end of the year. And the kermis was held at Taylor Alderdice High School. It was a very big event where they had somebody that actually sewed the costumes, designed and sewed the costumes. And some of the students had solos in the kermis. They came from the more well-to-do or affluent families, and they could afford to buy more than one costume and also pay for the rehearsals that were involved. I was just fortunate enough to be in a group, the chorus tap dancing, and it was really a very, very exciting event. Somewhere in the garage, I have a picture in one of the costumes. I recall that it was Kelly Green, and I was like a I don't know what you call a young woman that's a bellhop, but that's what I was.
But you never dreamt he'd go on and become so famous.
No. And when I'm traveling, and I said to them, you better beware, you know, when I get out on the dance floor, I took lessons from Gene Kelly. It's very impressive.
Okay, now to go back to our last tape, we had talked about your husband and his role and how he actually encouraged you to be liberated, were your own words.
Right.
And then you were about to tell us of some incident that changed the course of your life.
Right.
Would you like to pick up from
there?
Right.
I received a letter from Pioneer Women. That was the original organization that eventually became Na'amat USA in this country, inviting me to participate in a five-week seminar in Israel for young leadership. The seminar was sponsored by the World Zionist Organization and Pioneer Women. 20 women eventually ended up going and were selected, and I was one of the women. I wasn't sure I wanted to go. We had just joined a swim club here in the city, and it seemed that I would miss the whole summer. I was leaving two young little boys home, and it was five full weeks, which was a little bit much at that period in my life. However, my husband said it was an opportunity of a lifetime, and when would I get to Israel? And I certainly never thought I'd get to visit the state of Israel. I accepted. And I left on this trip and left my husband home for 5 weeks with the two young boys. There were many times when I was there. This was not a luxury five-star trip. We traveled through Israel on buses that were not air conditioned. We stayed most of the time in hotels that were not air conditioned. We traveled through the Negev and 130 degree heat on the bus that was supposed to have running water, a bathroom, and air conditioning, and it had none of these amenities. There were times I felt that if I had my husband and I could return home, it was all his doing that I was on this trip. Going back, when we were invited to go on the trip, we were asked to give 2 years of service to the organization, and here it is, 1990. And I would say that three-fourths of the women that participated in that particular seminar ended up in leadership positions. At that time, Pioneer Women was part of Pioneer Women in the United States and in Canada was one, they were one organization. It was one organization. And we have since divided, and they have their own president, and they're an autonomous group. There were three women from Canada who participated in the seminar, and 17 from the United States. Chicago had three women, and of course Pittsburgh, being one of the smaller or an intermediate type city, only had one participant. On that particular trip, we stayed in immigrant hostels, we stayed in places where we had to use a flick gun all night, the mosquitoes were surrounding us, we would shake the sheets, not that they weren't clean. In Haifa, we stayed at a hotel that actually, we found out later, was in the red light district, and without any bathroom, private bathrooms in the room. When we woke up in the morning, we realized we were underground and lifted the shade, and people were walking by us on the sidewalk. I think the thing that really changed my life or the direction that I would take was the meeting we had at the harbor in Haifa, where a ship came in from Morocco with 99 Olim, new Olim, and new immigrants, new Olim. In fact, you ask about the word Olim, some of us look so bedraggled when we would go to some of the new development towns like Dimona. In Dimona, they yelled out, Olim Hadashim, when they saw us getting off the bus.
They thought you were
seminars because we looked like new immigrants, and they said, welcome new immigrants, you know, and they thought we were also coming in. This was a special period in the life of Israel when Jews were coming in from Iraq, Iran, from Yemen, and now I'll go back to the ship. We arrived at the harbor waiting for the ship to come in from Morocco, and we waited about an hour. The ship was late in coming in, and then we were told we would be able to go up the gangplank to meet the new Olim on the ship. The Jewish agency staff workers and social workers from the Jewish agency were also aboard the ship, and we interviewed several couples, several families that came in. I would say that 75% of the people on that ship were blind in at least one eye. The smell on that ship, it has not left me. And I thought to myself, if this group would come into the city of Pittsburgh and they would just plunk them downtown, it would take the total cooperation of the Jewish and concerns of, and financial ability of the Jewish community to settle them. We would probably be embarrassed being even next to them and saying that they were Jews. However, we interviewed one family. It was a woman who was born a year after I was born in 1927, and she looked older than my Bobby, who at the time was about 73 or 74, and she was blind in one eye, and her three sons were blind in one eye, and I thought, what other country would take people in? But these were our Jewish people, and thank God we had a place for them to go. We also interviewed another young couple. The woman was pregnant, and the man had a young man, was a chauffeur, a butcher, and an electrician in Morocco. So I thought this was a good immigration, a couple that could really add to the future of the state of Israel, help the society. And when I left that, while we were on there, the Jewish agency certainly did their part in trying to tell them where they were going to settle. They gave them their supplies right aboard the ship, some money to get started with. They showed us a box of supplies with sardines and candles, etc. And then when we went down, I made this promise to myself. I mean, if they could do this for the Jewish people coming in, then the least that I could do that in the future, whenever I could say yes, I would say yes instead of no if I was asked to do something. So I would say that that really changed my life. We also noticed there were Jews, Israelis already, probably new immigrants that had just come in maybe a few months prior, who were sitting at the fence there, and already they were telling these new immigrants not to go to certain towns. And it became very difficult for the staff workers and the social workers of the Jewish agency to get them to go to some of the new development towns. Every one of them, like in this country, they want to go to the big cities, to Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, Miami. The same thing held true in Israel. They wanted to go to Tel Aviv first and then to Jerusalem. And so the social workers stayed there many times the whole night working with these new immigrants, and I admired them too. And when some of us are jaded and we think, well, the money isn't well spent and maybe it is a big bureaucracy in Jewish life, I do think that the end result is accomplished, and the fact that we have so many wonderful things in place, like the Jewish Agency, which is a quasi-government and certainly was the government before the State of Israel was created, and the whole thing holds true until this very moment with all the complaints about the departments and politics, etc., and the money that is being spent. The fact is that we are ready when the emergencies arise, and the Jewish Agency is certainly there right now with the Joint Distribution Committee in making sure that Jews get out of countries of distress, that their fare is paid for, that they're settled properly, and hopefully will have housing and jobs in the State of Israel. I'm trying to remember what else on that particular trip. I think also part of that trip was the fact that I had a shared experience with women that came from different cities, but we have remained steadfast friends. And the organization does run seminars of this nature every 4 or 5 years. They've never been the same as that one. For one thing, today you have so many women that are working that they could never take off for 5 weeks. And that was one of the things that they corrected immediately with the next seminar. They never sent women for such a long period of time. Also, the amenities and the accommodations were more suited to the American woman, because we stayed in places that I said to myself, no wonder new immigrants won't come in and you don't have Aliyah. I mean, we stayed in one place in Petah Tikva that didn't even have a mirror. So I ran down when the bus stopped, I ran into a place and bought a mirror and hung it up. I mean, you couldn't comb your hair or see what you looked like in the morning. And the next day, the woman in charge had mirrors in every single room. I may think of some other things on that trip. Oh, when we came back from the trip, we went immediately. I came home for 2 days, had time to, after that, it was really a cultural shock. I had never been on a trip like this, never been out of the country. I came into the house, and by the end of the 5 weeks, my husband, who normally is very encouraging, was so lonesome. The kids were busy, it was summertime, and he said, if one more person asked how I was, or when I was coming home, or invited him to dinner, he thought he would actually have to hit him, and that's not part of his nature. They had signs all over the house welcoming me. In every room, there were 3 and 4 signs welcoming me. Although my son said it wasn't so difficult to take care of the house, and they learned to do the laundry, but they stopped as soon as I came home. We were home 2 days, and we had a national, Pioneer Women had a national convention in Detroit, and they wanted the impact of this seminar to be part of the convention, and that certainly was. And they said some of the women went directly to Detroit, and I came home, and my husband said I was not going alone, so he took my clothes to the cleaners, and we repacked the car, and the 4 of us went to Detroit for the convention. At the convention, with 20 women there and giving reports, etc., you can imagine the effect it had on everybody at that convention. It wasn't easy to be there because of the jet lag. At night, I could barely hold my head up, and there were times I actually had to leave the meeting and go to the room, and my husband and my son ended up staying at the session. I will say that my husband has probably attended more Pioneer Women, and now none of my conventions and seminars. At times he even goes with me when I go to speak now since he's retired, than some of our own members, I'm sure, than most of our own members.
Could we go back to the Pioneer Women? Who actually initiated that group, and what was its main aim?
Well, Pioneer Women and NAMAP USA Today, we're going into our 65th year.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was probably a women that were involved with men that were part of the labor Zionist movement, the socialist, the labor Zionist, or the socialist Zionist movement, and the women would meet with the men, and Rachel Yanit Ben-Zvi, the wife of the second president of Israel, was very involved with women and a women's farm there in Israel and elevating the status of young single women that came into Israel. And she needed, supposedly, the story goes, whether it's a fable or not, I don't know, the story goes that she needed funds for a well, to dig a well on this particular settlement. And she wrote letters to this country, and then the women decided they didn't have to be part of the men's group anymore, and they were going to separate, and they were going to raise funds for this particular well, and to support the role of women and the elevation of women at that time. It was certainly not an easy place to live or to immigrate to, and with the background that men had to this very, and still have to this very day, it wasn't easy to set new roles for women in Palestine,
mm-hmm.
and then later to this very day in the state of Israel. There were seven national founders, and in this city there were seven founders too. The last two just passed away, Pauline Siegel and Fanny Pearl. Very outstanding, strong women. Golda Meyerson originally, was involved with Pioneer Women, and she was sent as a shliach to this country, an emissary, a membership organizer, to go from city to city to try to convince young women to join the organization. It had a certain philosophy, which eventually sold me completely, the fact that they believed in a just society, equality of the sexes, religious pluralism, equality in the workplace. These are goals which still have not reached 100%. And that's what sold me. She came to this city several times. In fact, she was at the home of Rose Berman. I don't know whether I mentioned this before, but she has a chair that she sat in. She always said, Golda Meir sat in this chair. In this city, because of the smoke, the story is told, and the smog in the city, if you recall, you'd go in, like when I was at Pitt, by 10 o'clock in the morning, you still couldn't see daylight, and your blouse was always dirty. Downtown, you couldn't see any of the buildings. There was always soot, like you were on a railroad train. And she was a very modest woman and dressed very modestly. She had her hair parted in the middle, and when I think of this, when I went on that seminar, they said they never saw a labor Zionist that didn't have their hair parted in the middle or have this dark hair, because at the time I was quite blonde and young at the time, and they were amazed that there were women in the labor Zionist movement that didn't have their hair parted in the middle. Getting back to Golda, when she came to this city, she normally traveled with one dark suit and a blouse. And they say that when she came to Pittsburgh, because of the dirt and the smog, this was a two-blouse trip. In her biography, her autobiography, she wrote that there was only one women's organization that she was ever involved in. She was certainly more comfortable with men and a leader amongst men. And I think it was Ben-Gurion that said, when you're looking for a good man, he was referring to Golda, when you're looking for a good man to do the job, ask a woman. So she was the woman that became very strong and very powerful. She certainly wasn't that active in the women's organizations later on, although she did come to national conventions. And when I attended meetings, international meetings in Israel, meetings of the labor Zionist world movement, the Bura as we call it, or the Lishka meetings, I can recall that she was at several of the meetings. She was on a kibbutz with us, and her sister also came to the meeting. Her sister lived in Israel also. And I was able to take a picture with her, which I treasure very much. She was not a woman that liked to be photographed or had the patience to stand and take a picture, and that wasn't part of her personality. She was a woman that was very, very forceful, didn't use flowery language, came out and asked for what she wanted. When she came here on big fundraising missions, she was able to get the money she needed. I recall she came here several times when we first started the Israel Bond campaign. One time it was in the middle of the winter, and we sat a whole night at the hotel. She was stuck somewhere in a snowstorm. Eventually she did show up to the meeting, and no one left. They sat there for 3 hours waiting for her to arrive. As I said, she was not a woman of many words. And at one of the World Zionist Congresses, she was supposed to be one of the speakers, and we had had a big day there touring. They invited 17 greeters, those that give greetings from national and international organizations, to give their greetings. Instead of speaking 5 minutes, 7 minutes, some of them gave major addresses. And by the time, and none of us left, because that was the only reason we went, because Golda Meir was going to be speaking. Finally, she got up, I think it was 11:30 at night, and she said, "You will remember me more if I say nothing tonight." And we were always referring to that, and she absolutely did not say anything, and we all left.
But when you did listen to her, was she really awe-inspiring?
She was very inspiring, and she didn't mince any words. When the word Aliyah was not popular, I recall she came to a convention that we had in Cleveland, and she was so resentful of the fact that we were not making Aliyah and moving to Israel and settling in Israel, and why were we Zionists, and what role did we have to play? And we resented it at the time. I mean, I don't think, not that we're rushing to move there today, and I think they realize that the Jews in the diaspora are not packing their bags and moving there, especially from the countries where it's very comfortable to live, and so far it's safe to live. I don't know that it will be forever. But we resented the fact that she told us in no uncertain terms that we really weren't Zionists, and what good were we, and why should we go on with the organization if we and our children were not moving and making Aliyah to Israel. The same thing held true when I met Rachel Yamnit Ben-Zvi. She said, "Well, if you're not moving here, at least one of your children should be moving to this country." And of course, that's still the goal of the Zionist movement, to have somebody in the family live in Israel, because if you have someone, whether it's a young person or an older person, eventually we will go to visit and possibly decide to settle there also, or at least live there part-time.
At what point did Pioneer Women become Na'amat?
I was the first president that was the president of Na'amat.
What year was that?
It probably was 8 years, it was 5 years ago, because I was in office 4 years, and I'm going to be out of office this August. So
1985.
Right, about 1985. Mm-hmm. Right. It wasn't an easy transition. Mm-hmm. There were women that held on to this name dearly, mm-hmm. and you could not convince them that we needed a change, because for one thing, the Bell Telephone Company had an organization called Pioneer Women. It's a volunteer fundraising organization. Another thing, the image was of women in covered wagons. In fact, at one time, my picture appeared in the Pittsburgh Press, and a woman from Sewickley called up that she felt she was eligible to join Pioneer Women because her ancestors came over on the Mayflower. So, and there were comments, you know, "Where's your covered wagon?" Also, many of us felt that we had too many names. We needed one name all over the world. And one, since Israel changed its name, Israel at one time was Irgun, Pioneer Women in Israel at one time was Irgun HaMohat HaVdot, and Moetzet HaPoalot, the Council of Working Women. There was great confusion because people would go on trips and on tours and on missions, and they would see the sign Pioneer Women, or in another place they'd see the sign Moetzet HaPoalot. And I myself attended a meeting with my husband. I went with him for B'nai B'rith to Israel, and a woman came, and she's from Irgun HaMohat HaVdot, which was the volunteers and the working women in Israel, and she's talking to the women from B'nai B'rith, And it took me about 15 minutes to finally put two and two together that this was the sister group of Pioneer Women. So Hadassah has one name, Ort has one name, B'nai B'rith has one name. And in Israel they had a contest and they came up with this acronym. And it's Hebrew for working women and volunteers. And basically that's what women's organizations are today. They've always, in Israel, that's what it's always been, working women and volunteers. And certainly in this country, it matches exactly what we are today.
So it's actual translation?
Well, the actual translation I have, it's in Hebrew, and I have it on one of the it's in one of these brochures right here, and I can give it to you in one second because I want to make sure that it is correct. It is a Hebrew acronym for Tenuat Nashim Avdot U'Mitnatvot, the movement of working women and volunteers.
I'm not quite clear. Was it your idea?
No.
No,
the name was first changed. They had a contest in Israel.
Okay.
And in Israel, we have 750,000 members.
Mm-hmm.
And it reflects the whole gamut of Jewish women in Israel. And also the political gamut. It's not just women in the labor Zionist movement. It's women from Likud and all the other parties, and there are elections, political elections. It's actually an activist political organization there, in addition to being a big, big volunteer movement with a major budget and over 1,000 installations throughout the length and breadth of Israel. They too saw the need for one name and had this contest, and they did a wonderful job in publicizing it. And when you go to Israel today, there isn't anyone that doesn't know about Naamah. We have over 800 daycare classes and about 27 to 28,000 young children in these daycare classes. We're way ahead of this country with daycare. In all the Project Renewal towns, including the Project Renewal town that's twinned with Pittsburgh, Kiryat HaKarmel, we run the daycare center. We also run the daycare center at the Hebrew University. We run the daycare center at the Hadassah Hospital. And in factories and in development towns and wherever it's needed. I have a complete brochure of all the installations with the daycare centers and the community centers and the legal aid centers. I mean, we do too many things. It's difficult to sell an organization when you don't have one thing to focus on. We have many products that we sell. And we, as Shimon Peres once said, you can, wherever you throw a stone in the state of Israel, you find Naamah. We have not done as good a job in promoting the name or the image of the organization or the worth, the true worth of the organization, and it takes a great deal of money in a big country like this. When we first decided to change the name, I can tell you that it was voted down. I mean, they held on to it, the older members held on to it so dearly, like it was their grandchild or their great-grandchild, and it was just sacrilegious to change the name. How could you change the name after all these years? Eventually, at one of the conventions, we were able to change it to Pioneer Women / Naamah. And finally, at the last, at the convention that I was installed as president, it became final, and I was the first president when it was officially Naamah USA. There were still women that had actually physical experiences because one woman called me from California that she was in the hospital all week because her pressure went up. She was so upset that we changed the name.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there were installations and facilities in Israel that had the name Pioneer Women on it, and they were afraid that people from their cities or the original donors would be very upset not with the new name. It isn't an easy name to pronounce. However, with all the Japanese companies that have came into this country and all their products, and eventually you learn how to pronounce those names, and it'll take some time, but certainly in this city, since I was the national president and I got a great deal of publicity, everybody, they won't mention one organization, especially one Zionist organization or an organization that is affiliated with Israel, without mentioning the name Naamah.
Naamah, how do you spell that?
Right here, N-A.
What does that mean in English?
I said, in this country we spell it in capitals because it is an acronym, and all acronyms are spelled in capitals. So I did mention it, that it's the Working Women and Volunteers, the Organization of Working Women and Volunteers.
So it's not called Pioneer Women.
No longer called Pioneer Women.
In Israel.
In Israel it was never called Pioneer Women.
Oh, but here you mean it's
in this
called
country and in the other countries. We're in 13, it's a world movement, by the way, and we're in 13 countries. I might mention my trip to Brazil later, because that was one of my most pleasant and memorable experiences, going to Brazil. That's the third strongest country for NAMAT.
Really?
In Brazil.
Do you have any affiliation with the UJF or any other Jewish organization?
I think I mentioned the last time that we were not a recipient of funds from the Federation in this particular city. In some cities, they do receive funds.
Mm-hmm. Is there a reason for that?
The reason for that was, at the time when it was possible to become an affiliate or to receive funds, the amount of money that the Federation was willing to give us was much less than what we were raising for that particular project. I believe it was Child Rescue, which tied in with Youth Aliyah in Israel. And our women weren't farsighted enough to know that they could take the money and then call the campaign by a different name or run a different campaign and still raise the funds. Because the organizations that came under the Federation umbrella and received funds to this very day, including Hadassah,